Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Pastor Butch Paul, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is the last day of October. It is the 31st, 2022. It is Monday. And for those of you for Halloween, happy Halloween, Butch.
Yeah, Melody, how you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Another month ramping up. I mean, another month of our lives going and flew by, too.
I know. It's incredibly fast.
Oh, it is, and so much stuff is happening. I know we have Greg on the day, but so much stuff is happening around the world. It's unbelievable how much stuff is happening.
There is, and I do want to tell the listeners, make sure you stay tuned. Don't turn that dial. We have Greg Hunter joining us today. I would have announced it last week, but it was just sort of a thing in the works, and so I only got confirmation this morning. So Greg Hunter will be joining us. He says he's got lots of things to talk about. He sounded pretty fired up, so I can't wait to talk to Greg Hunter. So let's go ahead and get started right away with the precious metals market. Gold pressure down 12 at 1634. Silver was down 11 pennies at $19.24. Platinum was down 17, 935. Palladium was down 48 at 1,933. The USDX is climbing back up. It's climbing and climbing at up 0.93 and at 111.60. Crude oil was down $1.73 at 86.17. Paper markets. The Dow closed lower, but they're still going to talk about how great it's been this best month since 1976. Oh-ho! But they're not going to tell you how they did it. No. They don't want you to know how they did it. They just want you to be dumbed down and make sure you stay in there. The Dow was down 128 points today at 32,732. The S&P was down 29 at 3,872. The NASDAQ was down 111, 10,988 bonds. Let's look at that 10-year yield, 4.05. European markets, France was the only one negative. Asian markets, Nikkei was positive by 1.75%. And we're looking at oil today. Let's see what natural gas was up. That's why I said they're going to run it. They're going to take it down. They're going to run it up. They're going to run it down. You know, it's up 10% today, almost 11%, 6.302 for natural gas. So lots to talk about. I do believe we have Greg Hunter on with us. Are you with us, Greg? Hi, Greg. Welcome to the program, USAWatchdog.com. So thank you for joining us today. Pastor Butch is with us.
Hello, Pastor Greg. Butch, how you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. How about you?
I'm doing well. I would say happy Halloween, but I don't celebrate Satan's Day. So, well,
I don't either.
I'm not a player.
I hear you.
I mean, it used to be kind of cool to dress up as some costume or whatever, but you think about what you're dressing up for and participating in, it's like, ew, right. Mm-hmm. That's pure evil, mm-hmm. Right?
So that's true.
I'm always trying to get, you know, like I used to tell my preacher, you know, before COVID, now he quit his service. But anyway, if I could only stop sinning, that's when I can stop. You know, it's just like whenever I start criticizing somebody, wait, let those of you without sin are the first. Yeah. Well, drop that rock. Right? Anyway, how y'all doing?
Great. I'm doing great.
Great.
Good to have you back. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Yes. But you know what, Greg? The time just goes by so fast. It's month to month, and then it's like, oh, we need to have Greg Hunter. We miss him.
Thank you. I find myself doing more and more work. I mean, it looks, when you look at my wrap-up, it looks kind of, technically, I'll call it dirty. You know, I'm just holding up pieces of paper and all that. But I always do the sourcing, right? I make sure the sourcing is good. And I'll tell you, the things that I can source, which what I think is legitimate sourcing, is just crazy enough. It's just absolutely, bizarre. what is going on in the world. I mean, and then you, when you take a look at what's going on with, and I've made a big point about this with my wrap up. I don't know. Did I tell you about the real numbers, the real approval numbers? Have I been on to tell you about that?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, let's talk about the real approval numbers, because these are the numbers you do not see, okay? And this will explain a lot of why the FBI, you know, breaks into a guy with seven kids, his house with seven kids to arrest him, and they hold semi-automatic and automatic weapons on four-year-olds. And, you know, you think, why are they doing that? Or why are they taking in, these people that did the 2000 mule things? Why is the U.S. Marshals arresting them? Okay, why are they doing what they are doing? Why are they doing this crazy crap? Why are they doing Jason?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the marvels of modern science. Thank you to our engineer Todd for replaying Monday's broadcast as we try to connect with one another. Dave Allen here. Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Melody, taking care of other business today. The number for all your gold and silver needs, toll free at 1-800-375-4188. Okay, for the next, 50 minutes perhaps, I'll be bringing you our opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day for Thursday, November 3, 2022. Let's get straight to the market report. In the New York spot aftermarket, the precious metals, we have gold down $4, about a quarter of a percent at $1,632 per ounce. Silver, up a percent and a half, 29 cents at $19.59. Platinum down 12 bucks, about a percent and a quarter at 929. Palladium down 56, a little over 3% at $1,876 and change. Other commodities, oil down $1.91. This is domestic, West Texas, accrued $88.09. International Brent down $1.57 at $94.59. Now, with all of yesterday's Fed action, no surprise, the 10-year yield up, just about all yields up today. 10-year yield up, 0.088. At 4.149. 2 year still inverted at 4.71. 5 year at 4.36. And now even the 30-year up 4.18. Again, signaling a coming recession. Of course, dollar index jumped up big time, percent and a half, to just shy of 113 today. In the paper markets, just about all international markets down today to varying degrees. Dow Jones right now looks like it's closing down about a half a percent, 146 points at 32,001. S&P 500 down a percent at 40. And the NASDAQ down 1.7%, 182 points, 10,343. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's market report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. A lot of markets today reacting to their central banks' decisions, particularly the Fed, another 75 basis point increase. We have Jerome Powell suggesting at his press conference that the Fed may decide in coming months to slow its aggressive interest rate increases. Yet he also made clear that the Fed isn't even close to declaring victory in its fight to curb an inflation rate that's near four decades high and has shown few signs of slowing down, at least substantially. When the Fed ended its latest policy meeting yesterday, it announced that it was pumping up its benchmark again by a substantial 0.75 point for a fourth straight time. Fed funds rate now stands in the range of 3.75 to 4%. It's the highest in 15 years. It was the central bank's sixth rate hike this year, a streak that's made mortgages and other consumer and business loans increasingly expensive and certainly is heightening the risk of a deep and possibly extended recession like they're expecting in the UK. More on that in a moment. The statement the Fed issued yesterday suggests it would begin to make a more deliberate approach to rate hikes, likely leading to smaller increases in borrowing costs, yet increases nevertheless. And in doing so, consider that rate hikes take time to feed into the economy and achieve their goal of slowing down price hikes, as we talked about earlier in the week and as I wrote about in this week's American Survival newsletter. So with Powell saying we still have some ways to go, officials are looking now to raise rates higher than the 4.6% they had forecast in September. Powell emphasized it would be very premature to even think about halting the rate hikes because the inflation pressures, he said, remain far too high. The abrupt shift in tone gave markets whiplash. After hitting an intraday high of 1664 yesterday, gold dropped 27 bucks to below 1637 at the close. Even more intense for stocks, which also reversed earlier gains and tumbled at their close. Dow Jones ending the day over 500 points down, percent and a half. Now, Vince Reinhardt, chief economist at Dreyfus and Mellon, says, I think Powell accomplished his goal of striking hawkish and dovish notes. That's why the market was so confused, indeed. So we will obviously have this at the top of our agenda and reporting to you on top of last week's European Central Bank announcing its second 0.75 percent hike to curb their inflation at 10.7% in the Eurozone. Now today, the Bank of England made its biggest interest rate increase in three decades. And, I think they're looking at 10.1% in September in inflation. The UK central bank boosted its key rate after consumer price inflation returned to a 40-year high. Now, the aggressive move comes even as the bank predicted a two-year economic contraction through June 2024, which would be the longest recession since at least 1955. This is in the UK. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey told reporters, if we don't take action to bring inflation down, it gets worse. There's no easy outcome in this sense. The average long-term mortgage rate, shaking your head, eye opens. It actually dipped back under 7% this week. I'm sure things will be different tomorrow morning. It's one day after the Fed raised rates again. Mortgage buyer Freddie Mac reported the average on its key 30-year lending rate fell to 6.95 from 7.08% last week. The rate was 3.09 last year at this time. For a 15-year mortgage, often used by folks refinancing their homes, that fell to 6.29 from 6.36 last week. A year ago, that was 2.35. Sales of existing homes have declined for 8 straight months now as borrowing costs become too high a hurdle for many Americans already paying more for food, gas, and other necessities, certainly hurting younger first-time home buyers. Other related news, an application for jobless benefits fell slightly last week, with the job market remaining resilient in the face of rising interest rates and this ongoing high inflation. Unemployment claims for the week ending October 29th fell by 1,000 to 217,000 from 218 the previous week, according to the Labor Department today. 4-week moving average ticked down more slightly by 500 to, call it 219,000. Again, considered a proxy for layoffs, these first-time applications for jobless claims have remained historically low this year, even as the Fed has cranked up its borrowing rate 6 times. All eyes will now turn to the Labor Department's October jobs report out tomorrow. Last peek at the state of the economy ahead of next Tuesday's midterm elections. One consensus estimate. What is it saying? Well, that it's going to be a little less than 263,000 in September. Now, let's see, before the break, American employers announced 34,000 new job cuts in October, a 13% increase over September. The report from Challenger Gray and Christmas, the executive coaching and global outplacement firm, said that's 48% than the 22,800 cuts announced the same month last year. October saw the highest number of job cuts announced in a single month since February of 2021. October is usually the month when seasonal employers announced large-scale plans for the holiday season. Employers announced plans to hire about 237,000 workers this season after a soft September total. The lowest, in fact, since 2011. Construction sector, what's that, with another 2,200, real estate, another 1,085, and the automotive sector, 10,000 cuts announced through October last year. Hey, I hear some music. That means there's a break on the way. Stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Oh, mercy, mercy, me.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. For all your precious metal needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. Boy, what a day across the world today. North Korea firing at least six more missiles into the ocean today, including an intercontinental ballistic missile, ICBM, that triggered evacuation warnings and halted trains in northern Japan as people were warned to get to underground shelter right away. And this is adding to a recent barrage of weapons tests that's really escalated tensions in that region. Now, the ICBM test was followed by launches of two short-range ballistic missiles in the morning, drawing swift condemnation by South Korea and other neighbors and the U.S., which reacted by extending the ongoing joint Air Force exercises with South Korea. The South Korean and Japanese military said North Korea later fired three more short-range missiles into waters off of its eastern coast. Those launches came an hour after a senior North Korean military official issued a statement threatening retaliation over the extension of the U.S.-South Korea drills. A vicious cycle spiraling upward, it seems. Yet Japanese Minister Yasukazu Hamada says the missiles traveled as far as 300 miles. Yesterday, North Korea fired more than 20 missiles, most it's ever launched in a single day, after already setting an annual record with dozens of ballistic launches in 2022, the North has further dialed up its testing activity since late September, including what it's described as simulated nuclear attacks on South Korean and U.S. targets. It said its tester meant as a warning against the U.S.'s military drills with South Korea and Japan, which it portrays as rehearsals for a potential invasion of the North. Experts say North Korea is escalating brinkmanship aimed at forcing the U.S. to just accept it as a nuclear power and negotiating economic and security concessions from more of a position of strength. Of course, nuclear disarmament talks between Washington and Pyongyang have been stalled since 2019, largely because of disagreements over an easing of crippling U.S.-led sanctions against the North in exchange for denuclearization steps. Back here in the States, White House reporting that close to 26 million Americans have applied for student loan forgiveness. And the administration has already approved 16 million of those requests. Yet the entire loan cancellation plan could be in eventual jeopardy due to legal challenges being brought by various Republican groups. The statement released by the White House warned, in part, working and middle-class Americans who could have up to $10,000 to $20,000 of their student debt relieved under the administration's plans will remain under the burden of loan debt, preventing them from pursuing the dream of home ownership, saving up for retirement, or starting small businesses. I wasn't able to get a quote from any of the six GOP-led states' legal challenge. But that legal challenge did temporarily stop the administration from officially, I guess, forgiving borrowers' debt. Although their lawsuit was rejected by a federal judge in Missouri earlier this month, Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, and South Carolina have appealed. But U.S. District Judge Henry Autry in St. Louis ruled earlier that while the states had raised important and significant challenges to the debt relief plan, they ultimately lacked legal standing to pursue the case. Apparently, standing is a more technical issue than what meets the eyes. The experts say the main obstacle for those hoping to foil the president's plan has been finding a plaintiff who can prove they've been harmed by the policy. Harvard Law professor Lawrence Tribe observed that such injury is needed to establish what the court calls standing. But he added, no individual or business or state is demonstrably injured the way private lenders would have been, for instance, if their loans to students had been canceled. But the GOP-led states didn't give up after their lawsuit was thrown out. They filed an immediate appeal and asked the court to stay the president's plan, which was supposed to start unfolding more last month. The 8th U.S. Circuit Court granted the state's emergency petition, leaving the administration unable to officially forgive any debt right now. In their challenge, the states accuse President Biden of overstepping his authority, claiming that Congress has to initiate that kind of action. In any event, we'll keep you abreast of what's going on. Certainly, with both sides having reasonable arguments, you never know where this could end up or when, but we'll be here to let you know. Well, here's some bad news. It looks like getting shoppers to spend this coming holiday season won't be easier. The National Retail Federation said today it expects holiday sales during November and December to rise between 6 to 8% from last year. That doesn't sound too chintzy to me, but when factoring in the effect of inflation, that's actually a decline. The sales forecast excludes spending at automobile dealers, gas stations, and restaurants. As of September, again, inflation up 8.2%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The trade group's outlook indicates a challenging holiday season ahead for retailers. A year ago, consumers shopped early, spent more to get gifts as stores struggled to keep shelves stocked amid shipping delays and other supply snafus. You got major retailers this year, like Walmart, Nike, they're swimming in extra inventory, like they say you wouldn't believe. Consumers are splurging less on items like clothing and electronics. However, as they pay more for groceries and other services like, well, eating out and traveling. The NRF chief executive, Matt Shea, said on a call that Americans have become more cautious about their purchases as grocery, energy, and other bills continue to rise. He said in some cases they're actually dipping into savings accounts and turning to their credit cards as a way to cushion spending. I just got good news, bad news on the one bank card my wife and I have for emergency purchases. It said, on one hand, our interest rate actually was going down for 18 months to, I think, 3.99%. But after that, any unpaid balances would go up from, like, I think, 17% to 27%. So it's a good idea to watch that kind of debt, ladies and gentlemen. Consumers plan to spend a reported $833 on gifts and holiday items, like decorations and food, according to the Federation. That's roughly in line with the last 10 years, but the amount may buy fewer goods because of, yes, inflation. Hiring, again, expected to be more modest, with retailers hiring an estimated 450,000 to maybe 600,000 seasonal workers. That's less than the 670,000 seasonal hires in 2021. You got other industry watchers like Bain and company predicting growth of as much as 7.5% from last year. That's just 1 to 3% when factoring in inflation. Alex Partners is projecting a 4 to 7% increase, which actually represents a drop in accounting for inflation. In 2020, holiday sales rose over 8% from the previous year to slightly over $777 billion, according to the Federation, as consumers cheered themselves up during the awful pandemic with gift-giving during that season. Last year, holiday sales jumped 14% and hit a record $887 billion. This year's projected increase would put spending at roughly $942 to $960 billion. Well, here's a little off-the-wall article, but one that speaks to the psychology of Americans. Mike Allen of Axios says there are two kinds of people: those who get to the airport with hours to spare, browse retailer Hudson News and grab a snack, and those who dash through security, yanking their seatbelts on and bound for the gate with 2 minutes to spare. Turns out how people approach the airport gives us clues about their personality and their past. Johnny Jerkin, a psychiatrist at the University of North Carolina, says traveling is anxiety-inducing, especially nowadays. He says people will try to manage that anxiety in different ways. Many early arrivers, he says, will try to take control of the situation and leave way more than enough time for all possible contingencies, while many late arrivers will deal with the headaches of travel by avoiding thinking about them altogether and then scrambling at the last minute. Or, Gherkin notes, maybe specific events in your life have molded your airport behavior. For example, your parents' habits might have influenced your years. And the one time you missed a flight might have flipped you from late arrival to early bird. Or maybe you're an early arriver who married a late one, and now the two of you have compromised to figure out a ritual that works. When travel came roaring back after the pandemic, it seemed like the early arrivers had the right idea, according to Allen. Airports had historic delays, lots of cancellations, security lines out the door, and, well, missing flights were more and more common. But too early isn't great either, he points out. A number of airport lounges, including Delta Sky Club and American Express's Centurion lounges, have started limiting how long people can hang out there before takeoff. You know, it's 3 hours tops, unless you've got a long layover or delay you can prove. As travel picked up again and work stayed hybrid or remote, more and more people were arriving at the lounges several hours early to take advantage of the free grub and plentiful outlets. Now, the results of next week's midterm elections on Tuesday could create a new dynamic
around U.S. fiscal policy. Not monetary policy, but fiscal policy, driven by members of Congress. It includes a return to intense standoffs around the debt ceiling and federal spending in general that tend to rattle markets and fuel uncertainty. Now, if the polls prove correct, it looks like Republicans may win a slim majority in the House and possibly nick one out in the Senate. They win one or especially both houses, congressional Republicans could seek major policy concessions from the Biden White House in exchange for, well, acquiescing on spending and debt issues, as they did in 2011 and other similar points in time. And that creates a layer of uncertainty as the economy faces a strong possibility of a recession. Strategists are all but certain there will be a fiscal showdown similar to the one in, 11 years ago? At the time, Republicans refused to raise the debt ceiling without drastic concessions on government spending, thus bringing the country to the brink of, its first official default. The ultimate compromise then set in motion a series of automatic spending cuts known as the sequester. And that is one of the things that begun seeing in some late campaign ads with Democratic candidates warning that Republican candidates, if they win, will make Social Security and Medicare move that from being, quote, mandatory or entitlement programs to discretionary programs, which in the past have been subject to automatic cuts under the sequester. But then there's a debt ceiling. A legal cap on federal borrowing was raised last year and will sustain the government until next summer, at least according to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. That time, it's going to be have to be raised. And some Republicans have been hinting at plans to use the debt ceiling as a high-stakes negotiating tool to push for spending reductions and entitlement reform. Just how intense those demands are may depend on the makeup of especially the House. GOP hardliners there are going to push for a more aggressive stance on spending than the rest of the party and party leadership would want to. That's Brian Gardner, who's the chief Washington policy strategist at the firm Stifel. In recent episodes, he added, "I think people have just become accustomed to, yes, there's going to be drama, but at the end of the day, it will get done." But Rob Dent at Nomura says next year could be different, just because of how much more willing Republicans may be to push it to the limit. Hey, we've pushed it to the limit as well. It's time for another break. Stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver needs. Well, here's something pretty much anyone who follows economic data closely can agree on. The American labor market is hot, but cooling. What's less clear, according to Yahoo Finance's Ben Castleman anyway, is just how hot it is or how fast it's cooling down. That question matters a lot to Fed policymakers trying to find a way to bring inflation under control without causing a recession, although I'm afraid that bus has already come and gone. Castleman takes us through two measures that offer subtly but importantly, different answers. Number one, the number of job openings that employers are trying to hire workers for. Again, that metric shows a labor market that's pretty doggone strong and has only recently begun to cool. Number two is, many people who voluntarily quit their jobs each month. Many economists consider that statistic to be a key barometer on the strength of the labor market, and it suggests the labor market is strong and not so far out of line with historical patterns. So then why do these metrics and the issues they raise matter? Well, as Castleman points out, the biggest problem facing the economy right now is that prices are rising much too fast. That dynamic stems partly from lingering effects of the pandemic, which continue to disrupt supply chains around the world, and global geopolitical forces, particularly the war in Ukraine, which has pushed up the price of many foods and certainly energy. Most economists agree that rapid inflation is also at least partly the result of excessive demand. I mean, American consumers want more cars and airline tickets and restaurant meals than companies can simply produce, pushing up prices. The Fed's trying to tamp down demand by raising interest rates, which makes borrowing money more expensive for both consumers and businesses. After yesterday's 75 basis point hike, experts are less in agreement about what the Fed will do in the months ahead. Some economists argue the Fed should hold off on further rate increases and see whether inflation begins to ease. I made that case in this week's American Survival newsletter. Others say the Fed should just keep going until its efforts clearly have had an effect. Which path policymakers choose? I mean, it depends in large part how Jerome Powell and his Fed colleagues view the labor market. If companies keep adding jobs and raising pay, inflation's likely to remain high, and the Fed's likely to remain aggressive in its fight to tame it. If job growth stalls and unemployment rises, the Fed could pause sooner to avoid causing a deeper recession. And so far, the Fed seems firmly on the side of those who see the job market as too hot. Indeed, Powell said yesterday that any talk of a pause in rate increases is premature. Last year, the Fed has been focused on one measure of the labor market in particular, job openings. That's why they look at the Labor Department's JOLTS survey. Powell's repeatedly noted that there are roughly twice as many vacant jobs as unemployed workers available to fill them, hovering between like 1.9 and 2.1 past several months. The logic behind Powell's attention on job openings is simple. They're a direct measure of demand, since employers typically don't try to hire when no one's buying their products or services. And they have a clear connection to wage growth, too, and therefore inflation, because when lots of companies are hiring, they have to pay more to compete for workers. Fed officials have been hoping that as interest rates rise, companies would respond by cutting back on recruitment. But so far, we've seen only limited evidence of that. I mean, some economists, however, began to question the Fed's seemingly obsessive focus on job openings. Other signals like the unemployment rate show the labor market is strong. That is the headline unemployment rate, which in my mind is nearly irrelevant, but it's still not as strong as openings would imply. Which brings us to Castleman's second indicator, what economists call quits. We've heard about the Great Resignation, that surge in people leaving their jobs as the economy reemerged from pandemic-induced lockdowns. I mean, the phenomenon was real, but the narrative often missed a crucial element, he says. Most weren't quitting to sit on the couch. They were taking other, almost always better-paying, jobs. Economists see quitting as a sign of confidence among workers. Changing jobs is a risk, so people avoid doing so if they're worried about the economy. And since people typically don't jump employers without a bump in pay, job switching contributes to wage growth. Job data yesterday from ADP shows that people who switched jobs in October saw their pay rise roughly twice as quickly as people who stayed put. In late 20 and 2021, resignations and job openings rose roughly in tandem. But then the number of people quitting began to level off, even as openings kept rising. Americans are still changing jobs more than they were before the pandemic, and only modestly so. So, Castleman concludes, if openings suggest the labor market is a raging inferno, guess what? Resignations simply imply it is more like an uncomfortably hot day. All right. Listen, I know this next one sounds like the title of an Elton John song, but BB is back. Yes, with nearly all the votes counted, Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid conceded today to defeat former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The State of Israel, he says, comes before any political consideration, Lapid said. I wish Netanyahu success for the sake of the people of Israel and the State of Israel. Now, the man who's dominated Israeli politics for more than a decade, Netanyahu, looks certain to have made a dramatic return to power with the help this time of far-right parties that surged into the mainstream there after the country's latest election. Netanyahu and his allies have won enough seats to form a majority government in Israel's parliament. And that result will not just secure Netanyahu's comeback, but underscores the country's rightward shift. And that's going to pose a headache for the current U.S. administration and further sidelines hope for peace. Long-term with the Palestinians. There are still weeks of coalition negotiations ahead, which could yield a late surprise, but as the dust settles on Israel's fifth election in less than 4 years, it's a nationwide election, Netanyahu, who's standing trial on corruption charges, looks set to return to the prime minister's office. The 73-year-old is the country's longest-serving leader, having been in office for a total of 15 years over two separate stints. But the government he appears likely to form would be the most conservative in Israeli history. These far-right parties that were once on the fringes in Israel have now won more than 10% of seats in their parliament. They're also likely to secure cabinet seats this time around. Among them is Jewish Power. That's the ideological descendant of an extremist group that was once placed on the U.S. terrorist watch list. Its leader, Itamar Ben-Gvir, was convicted in 2007 of protesting a terrorist group and inciting racism when he held anti-Arab signs at a protest. Ben-Gvir told his supporters, "I'll work for all of Israel, even those who hate me." Ben-Gvir said throughout the campaign that one of his top priorities in government would be loosening the rules of engagement for Israeli troops, thus making it easier for them to use lethal force against Palestinians who attack them with stones or firebombs. Now, 2022 is already on course to be the bloodiest year for the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem since 2005. Around 125 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli fire already this year. About 25 Israelis and foreigners have been killed in the Palestinian attacks. The Biden administration has said it's prepared to work with an Israeli government of any configuration. And last today, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal writes that yesterday's Fed decision was, quote, interesting. That's one way of looking at it. When the actual announcement came out at 2 p.m., stocks rallied because Wiesenthal said there was some language in the statement that was kind of pivotish. And then Powell delivered the press conference, and stocks got slammed. He points out that the line that caught people's attention in this statement was where the Fed said that the paces of hikes will take into account the cumulative tightening of monetary policy with lags, the lags with which monetary policy affects economic activity and inflation and economic and financial developments. In other words, it was an acknowledgement that we've seen a very fast pace of rate increases this year. That although inflation measures have yet to turn down because monetary policy does famously work with lags, the hikes we've seen already may still exert downward force on future price increases. But then in the press conference, and here's the predictable Fed overreach, Powell made clear that they're more concerned about doing too little than too much, particularly when it comes to inflation, and that the ultimate peak rate would likely be higher than what they said at the September meeting. I think that was, what, 4.6%. It also means that the chances for a soft landing have narrowed. And Powell said, yes, it has narrowed because of the extremely tight labor market and the implication that has for how much the Fed needs to raise rates further. However, Wiesenthal believes that as long as the government's headline unemployment rate remains historically low, the soft landing scenario where inflation comes down without a surge in layoffs can't be entirely ruled out. And so one way Wiesenthal believes we can make sense of that line in the statement about the monetary policy lags is that the Fed is creaking open the window of letting that soft landing scenario unfold. In other words, to some extent, we're revisiting the transitory debate that started almost 8 months ago. 18 months, excuse me. But like the Fed having been late to jump on that bandwagon, I think they're going to end up having overreached once they got on. Now, you got some drivers of inflation, like Putin's war, supply chain snafus, changes in consumption patterns since the pandemic that will revert or even normalize. And if those drivers are significant, then that normalization means less need for rate hikes. But obviously, the Fed's in hiking mode and will be for some time. But Wiesenthal points to two things. First, there really has been a very fast pace of hikes since March, from basically zero at the start of the year to now an upper range of 4%. It's possible that the full effects of the hikes, like how with housing, have yet to be felt. And second, an obvious lesson from this year is that nobody knows really when or where inflation is going to slow down. So with so much uncertainty on inflation itself, you have to take any peak rate forecast with a grain of salt. Powell can say that that rate will probably be higher than what it was in September, but the Fed can't and doesn't really know. The only thing we really know for sure is that the Fed is thinking about some step down in the pace of hikes, which, according to Powell, may come as soon as the next meeting in December or the one after that. Then, as Wiesenthal concludes, we will see if ongoing normalization and the lagged effects of the rate hikes can do some more of the heavy lifting and shift pressure away from the need for more tightening, thus possibly keeping the coming recession from becoming too darn devastating. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody be back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks again to our amazing engineer, Todd, and to you for turning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Okay, gotta be gratuitous. Go Phillies. Bye-bye. If I got me, oh well.